Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com Analyze Your Trade, episode number 102 for November 12th, 2019. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and today we will be discussing your trade ideas. So over the last few days, about 30 people submitted up to five symbols each, and I put the list together, which you should have seen in the email that went out just a little while ago. And we'll be going through that list and getting talking about as many as we can today. So today I've arranged for Stephen Brooks to join us. I've known Stephen for a couple of years now, and actually finally just got to meet him in person in Vegas a few days ago. So happy to have Stephen back on the show. And Jim Kenny is also here to moderate, and I'm going to turn it over to Jim.
Great. Thanks, David. And welcome, everybody, to the show here today. We've got 15 stocks. We'll try to get through quite a bit of them, and we're also going to hear some of Stephen's ideas as well. But before we get started, for people who are not aware, let Stephen introduce himself and tell us a little bit about the company that he's running down there.
Sure. Thank you, Jim. So I'm Stephen Brooks, like David was mentioning. And thanks, everyone, for coming. This is awesome. The market just closed. We're at or near all-time highs. That's really exciting. In a former life, I was a professional baseball player. So those folks that think you might need some sort of a background in education or a college education in trading and finance to be able to do this successfully, well, I'm living proof that you likely don't. So in a former life, I was a professional baseball player. Over the last 12 years or so, I've been a self-directed investor. And over the last couple of years, I've become very passionate in helping folks become much more consistent with their trading. And I'm super excited to be here with all of you right now.
Yeah, the H.L. Hunt of the famous Hunt brothers used to say, education is for refinement, and it's probably a liability.
Nice.
At any rate, and I always love that line because it's pretty accurate, I think. Anyway, we're going to go through the stocks here now, and the first one is going to be Gray Television. I noticed CBS and Viacom were starting to get a bid. They're in the broadcasting business as well, and this particular company has gone from 15 up towards 20. So do you see something happening here, Stephen?
My philosophy might be a little bit different than some folks, especially when it comes to reading some of these names that are on here. So before I even look at a chart or look at a potential trade, the first thing I want to do is, in my opinion, there are only so many things you have in control when it comes to the market. You don't really have control over news. You don't really have control over earnings, what the Fed might do, what a company might do, right? But you do have control over things like which stock you're potentially going to buy, sell, put an options trade on, et cetera, et cetera. So before I even look at the stock, for example, and if it's maybe bullish or bearish, the first thing I look at is, I want to make sure that this stock is an acceptable stock for me to even consider a trade on. And what I'm talking about there is something called liquidity. Now, liquidity is kind of a big, you know, SAT word that gets thrown around from time to time. But liquidity means participation. If there is enough participation in the stock for me to go ahead and trade, that's great. Then I'll go ahead and do it. And if not, if the liquidity and the participation are not there, the reason that is a non-starter for me is because that means I have to take a loss the majority of the time just to enter a position. So before I even look at this chart, for example, GTN, before I even look at that, I want to make sure that this is acceptable for me to trade and I don't have to take a loss just to enter the position. There's no reason to have to do that. So the way I look at that, there's a few filters, if you will, that I take a look at. The first thing is, I know that there is demand for shares, or there is sufficient amount of participation if there are a few million shares traded on a given day. On a $19 stock, to have only 800,000 shares traded on a given day, to me, means there is very low participation in this stock, and it's more than likely I will have to take a loss just to enter the position. So I don't want to go ahead and do that. So GTN is something I wouldn't even trade it. However, we can trade something. If you like GTN or you don't like GTN, you can trade something that will give you very similar movement without having to worry about taking a loss just to enter the position. And what I'm talking about there is something called correlation. And I apologize if I'm getting into way too much here, and please cut me off if I am. But one of the things that I will take a look at, if I see a stock that does not have the liquidity that I'm interested in, thus I have to take a loss just to enter the position, what I will do is I will see which stocks have similar price movement to that stock. And rather than just talking about diversification, which is just, you know, this sector and this sector, which doesn't ever work, I talk about something called correlation. What that does is that takes the price movement of stock A and compares it to the price movement of stock B over the last year, thus giving you a very good idea if two stocks are going to move similar to one another. So what I just did here before the show started is I took GTN and I kind of took my watch list of the stocks that I follow that have the liquidity I care about. And I looked at their correlation against GTN over the last year. Maybe I can make this a little bit bigger so everyone can kind of see. And this is just something that Thinkorswim kind of gives you. GTN, right there, great technologies or great television. And it will come up with a number between 1 and -1. The higher the correlation, the more likely, based on the price movements of the last year, these stocks are to trade with one another. So right now, and I haven't even looked at the chart. But right now, I see that there are a couple of stocks that really stick out. I don't know what stocks they are. I don't know what sectors they're in, but I do know that 98% of the time, Baidu will move with Gray Television. Is Baidu and Gray Television a similar company? I have no idea, but I don't care. So rather than me talking about maybe GTN, I would look at something like Baidu, because Baidu, I know, has the liquidity that we care about. So I don't have to take a loss just to enter a Baidu position or a Qualcomm position, for example. So let's take Baidu as an example and look at that instead of something like GTN for my purposes. Baidu, again, looks very, very, very similar to GTN. Very, very similar over the last year. Both have popped up here over the last couple weeks. Looks like maybe there was good earnings right here. So Baidu, similar to GTN, is kind of mid-range for the last year. There's not a lot of oversold or overbought at this point. But I do say for GTN, and I do say for Baidu specifically, if maybe we get some consolidation here over the next couple days or weeks that shows that maybe there's some footing, this looks like a better long option than a short option. Again, I apologize that this is a little bit long, my explanation, but looking at this list, there are a lot of stocks that have very, very thin volume and very, very low liquidity, and I don't want to take a loss just to enter the position. So for a GTN type of trade, if we can consolidate here for a little bit without coming down too much, this looks like a nice long.
Yeah. And again, what you're doing is you're trying to take the question, which is GTN, and also put it into the realm of what you do.
Yes.
And again, this correlation numerical situation here is new to me, so I'm sure it's new to many listeners right now. Yep. And it's kind of an interesting thing. And what you're basically saying is a company like Baidu, whose volume is much greater, would give you better liquidity when you go to buy and sell, and the bid offer may be tighter than it would be on GTN.
Absolutely. Now, we are after 4 o'clock, so the numbers that you see on the screen are going to be a little less accurate in terms of what they are on a given day. But if I look at just the options in GTN, today there were 94 contracts traded, just today in GTN. But if I look at Qualcomm, which moves 98% of the time exactly as GTN does, the amount of options contracts traded today were 37,000. So if you're going to get similar price movement, which one is going to give you a better chance of getting filled at the price you want, with the time you want, with the size you want? Well, to me, 10 times out of 10, it's going to be Qualcomm, for example. Just today, look at the volume. The volume on the options contract shows how many were traded here today. We have hundreds, if not thousands, at each of these strikes for just one expiration. And the open interest is how many open options contracts there are that have not been closed. We have thousands at every single strike price. If we look at GTN, I mean, there's nothing. There's not even 100. So it's interesting to look at something like GTN. I've never seen it, never heard about it, but I do know that GTN moves 98 percentile with Baidu and with Qualcomm, and 97% with CTL. So if you like GTN, well, you definitely like these a lot more, just because, again, you won't have to take a loss just to enter the position, and there's a lot more demand for your shares or your options contracts, which means you'll get filled at a better price in a shorter amount of time with any size you want.
All right, let's go to the next guy here, which is a stock that fell out of bed. It was very overbought versus its 200-day moving average. Then it tanked down to 100, which was a good area of support. And then it had a big pop. And I think it's back on the defensive a little bit, if I'm not sure. This is Roku, R-O-K-U.
Yeah. So
volatile, yeah.
Yep. So Roku, whoops, can't even spell today. So Roku is on my list. Again, if we take a look at GTN, or which by the way is a $20 stock that had 800,000 shares traded today. Roku, 24 million shares traded on a given day. So which one do you think there is more demand for your shares? 198,000 options contracts traded today. So there is no need to go ahead and find an equivalent in something like Roku. Roku's interesting. It's kind of in no man's land territory right here. If we can get a move, maybe above this level right here, 151 and change, that would be a nice, interesting level for me, maybe on its way back to at or near all-time highs. It's consolidated a little bit. Like we heard before, this is definitely oversold here. So if we can get to a level that's maybe 151 or above, that's definitely something interesting. However, if we break down below this low right here, 115, maybe it's more interesting on the short side.
So are you kind of looking for to play momentum in many cases with these? In other words, right now you're kind of in a no man's land because it had a snapback rally, then it had a pullback. It just filled the gap, which is nice. But if it fails from here, you wouldn't want to go long.
Correct.
But if it got above 151, you'd feel like you'd have a crowd behind you to push the thing, keep going.
Correct. And again, to me, there's really no price extreme here to say that, oh, this is oversold or overbought. That's not what I'm seeing right here. So I will need some sort of a momentum move to maybe make a play here.
Okay. All right. Let's go to number three here, which is that SPAR, which is, I think, Spartan Automotive or something, Spartan Motors. And
so again, SPAR would not be something I would ever trade. 575,000 shares traded today and 143 options contracts. So in terms of demand, it's very, very sparse, if you will. So we have SPAR, if I can try to make a joke there that wasn't funny. And again, we can go through my watch list. And this watch list is nothing special. All it is stocks that have a few million shares traded on a given day. They have small bid-ask spreads, that all that is. So if I go ahead and see which stock out there is most correlated to Spartan Motors, you don't really have any that are very, very highly correlated. And you don't really have anything that is ultra negatively correlated. So for me, SPAR, I mean, it looks like maybe it's consolidating here for a move higher, but I personally would not touch this because there is not enough liquidity for me, and there is no, other option that moves very, very similar to SPAR. So I would pass on this as a non-starter.
The correlation is really just on the chart pattern. It really doesn't have anything to do with the company because you got a McDonald's, which would have nothing to do with automotive, right?
Correct. So it's just price movement. So that's it. So does price go up? Like on a given day, if SPAR goes up 1% and CL goes up 0.75%, right? So CL to SPAR would have a 0.75% correlation on that day. So we take it over the last year. Pretty big sample size. So again, what it does, and one of the nice things about correlation, is that it completely weeds through all of the vanity metrics, like which sector it is in, for example, or all that stuff. It just looks at pure price movement.
Okay. Well, I've never really heard of that kind of an approach. That's very new to me and very interesting because I wasn't aware that there was software that would actually give you stocks that are correlated price-wise as far as patterns are concerned.
Yep.
To the ones you're looking at. So that's very new information for me.
Sweet.
This next one is a little bit better volume, but still nothing to write home about. And this is the Camping World, CWH.
Right, so you do have a little bit more volume and you do have a little bit more volume in CWH. And what I'm looking at here is the first thing my eyes are drawn to. Again, I haven't looked at the chart, have no idea what's going on. But the first thing my eyes take a look at is volume right here. If I don't see a million, it's tough for me, especially with such a small price stock. This is, right, in terms of the notional value, this is peanuts. You know, there are individual trades by hedge funds, by individual money managers, and individual traders that are larger than the notional value of how much money was traded today in Camping World. So I look at the volume, and then after that, I look at the options contracts traded, just total. Right? There's only about 627,000, not a lot. And then I go to maybe one of the expirations. I see that the bid and the ask spread is about 10 cents wide here. This is not the worst thing in the world I've ever seen. So what I would do in just my way of thinking about this is I would go over to correlation. I would type in Camping World, which is CWH.
CWH, yeah.
Yep. This is okay to, this is not the worst thing in the world to trade. So what I'm doing is I'm seeing if there's a very good alternative to this. because if there is a very good alternative to this, I'll go ahead and trade that. If not, we can probably make do with something in CWH. So I just want to make sure I wrote that in there. CWH. Right there. Go ahead and press enter. I think that was the number we have there. So very interesting. We have Microsoft moves at a 97% correlation to Camping World. Again, two stocks that are in completely different sectors. But in terms of their price movements, they're very, very similar. So we have CWH. Actually, Microsoft's nowhere near this. So that's kind of a bad example. Maybe what's the opposite one? We have ATVI. ATVI, a little bit more similar. But anyway, if we go back to Camping World, CWH. Looks like it had some decent earnings or some news that came on here. That's at the very low end of the range. I don't see any edge either way right now. If we were maybe more towards the lower end of the range, maybe in the 8 or 7 handle, maybe this would be an interesting long, but I don't like to buy a stock after it's up over 18% in the last 10 days. And for me, it's not at a price extreme level to maybe go ahead and put on a short position. We would need to see a much more of an extreme move to the upside, much more overbought conditions. So Camping World, I would sit on my hands.
Yeah. It's gone from the 45 area in the last couple of years all the way down to, like you say, just under 9. Mm-hmm. And the short interest is 20% of the stock almost. So a bounce like this could very well just be short covering for all you know. And that's why you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because short covering, if it's not followed by legitimate buying, is going to be hard to sustain the bounce, you know.
Mm-hmm.
GPN is the next guy here. And let's see what GPN's doing. GPN.
Global Payments Inc. So this one is a little bit better in terms of the fact that you do have, it's $171 stock and it has 1.3 million shares. This is acceptable when it comes to liquidity and when it comes to volume, right? This one, this stock, again, have a look at the chart, has a much better chance, much, much, much better chance of you getting filled at the price you want without having to take a loss. So let's take a look at what the chart looks like. So Global Payments, this looks very strong. This looks very strong, but it also basically just looks like the S&P 500, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So I am not a buyer of the S&P 500 at all-time highs. And because it looks like this stock is basically the exact same thing as the S&P 500, these look more or less exactly identical. I would not be a buyer here of GPN because, again, I think it basically just moves with the market and I'm not buying the market at all-time highs. I'm not shorting it, but I'm definitely not adding to longs at all-time highs. And I wouldn't do that here. If I did maybe a little bit more research on the company and find out what Global Payments actually was, maybe I'll be more interested because I think we're getting rid of cash and Global Payments might be something that's interesting. But I'm not putting new money to use at all-time highs or a stock that mirrors the S&P 500 one-to-one.
Yeah, it's very close to the upper end of its trading range of 150, 175. And consumer discretionary ETFs are starting to look like they're kind of getting a little tired. So if they rolled over, you might imagine that consumer finance stock like Global Payments may also give some of this gain back as well. Huh?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, turning to next one is just the spider here. And we went up and made a new all-time high today. So that was probably clearing out the last of the stops. And now we'll have to see what happens. We did close a little lower, I think, off of those highs. Let's see. Went up to what? 310 and closed at around 309, a little under 309. So it'll be interesting to see what happens up here. Huh?
Yep. So again, like if we talk about one of the things that you want to make sure of when you're trading or investing is you don't have to be crazy obsessed with risk versus reward, but you have to kind of keep it in the back of your mind. Looking at this chart, okay, I'm not a big chartist, but I would be surprised if someone could really convince me that the S&P 500 has a very good risk to reward to the upside. I would be shocked. We're at or near all-time highs. Can we go higher? Yeah, we can absolutely go higher. There's no question about that. But how much higher compared to where we can go on the downside? So I would not put any more money. I would not put new money. I'm not a hedge fund underperforming the market, so I don't need to chase this thing higher for the rest of the year. But what I will say is, if we do somehow get a sell-off, maybe into the beginning of December, right? Seasonally, the market is very strong over the last few weeks of the year, very strong. And especially when the previous December December was a bad month. So if you look at last year, for example, December was probably down a handful of percentage points. Maybe, well, it looks really bad, actually. It probably was down maybe even 10% December alone. Seasonally and statistically, after that happens, then the following December is up like 85% of the time. And again, you do have those seasonal strengths that might end up levitating the S&P 500 towards the end of the year. So I would only be putting new money to work in the overall S&P 500 if we got a little bit of weakness into maybe early December.
And we'll probably know by the end of the week if this thing can hold its water, because frankly, if by the end of the week some of these earnings don't come out properly and things slow down as far as the enthusiasm of the trade deal, those would be two reasons why we could have a little bit of a dip.
Yep. And in terms of risk reward, to me, and I'm just speaking for myself, it's substantially better to the downside than it is to the upside, substantially. You know, we started the year on the S&P at like 250 on SPY. We're at 310. We had a couple of minor blips there, but other than that, it's been very much smooth sailing, especially over the last couple of weeks. The risk reward on the overall market, not saying it's going to happen, not saying we're going to crash, but to me, the risk reward on the overall market is substantially to the downside compared to the upside. I mean, these are all time highs. Like, where's the price level to get to? You know, no one really knows. There's a lot below it, especially going straight up over about 9% over the last month. That's a big, big move. Not so much of a big move in an individual equity, but for an index, that's a giant, giant move. So you have a pretty big price extreme over the last month. You don't have extra volume as we are going additionally higher in the overall just equity market. So again, the risk reward of the upside is not there, not even close. It's definitely better to the downside. So looking at this, I actually might put on something bearish tomorrow in SPY.
Yeah.
And more than likely
will. A stock like Apple is trading about 30% above its 200-day moving average. And
yes, big.
My feeling, when they get like that, it's time to get the raincoat out.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to crash.
No.
Right.
No.
But like the risk reward, like we're talking about, you know, Apple at nosebleeding levels in terms of where fair price might actually be. It's a different ballgame. I mean, have we been higher or more extended from this 200-day moving average in the market this year? Yes, once, right here, right? Not saying that this is going to happen and we're going to all of a sudden lose, you know, 100 handles on the S&P 500, but the risk reward and the overextension, you know, is definitely there right now to the downside.
Yeah, one of the stocks that was very, very resilient to not dropping, even though it was way overbought, was Chipotle. But I noticed that it's gone from 850 and had about a $100 correction because the 200-day average is in the 725 area. Mm-hmm. So that's a classic example of a stock that was very resilient, staying way overbought, basis the 200-day average. And then at some point, boom, it just, some news comes out and the gap between the price and the average converges.
Yep. And again, one of the things, and you can't see that from this chart that I'm showing, but as the price of the market is going up and volume is not really confirming that, and volume is maybe not confirming that, that has the potential to have one of those liquidation breaks where you have a day that's down 40 points, down 50 points, just because there's not a lot of people in there trying to defend their position. So again, like, do markets go up over time? Yeah. Have we had a really good year? Yeah. Could the market be higher a year from now? Yeah. But today we are very extended from the 200-day, like Jim's talking about. You know, we're at nosebleeding levels and there is much better risk reward to the downside. And I'll definitely put on a bearish trade tomorrow in this one.
All right, this last one before we go over some of the stuff you're focused on is, I guess people would call it a China trade, because Caterpillar has gone from 115 or so or 120 way up to almost 150 here recently. And I think a lot of it has to do with the possibility of them buying a lot of grain and getting the farmers going quite a bit. And also maybe some deals where Caterpillar equipment is being bought and sold over in China. But has it come too far too fast? That's the question. And what are you thinking on Caterpillar?
Yep. So one of the things that I like to do is I like to buy into weakness and sell into strength. There's no weakness here, right? We're at the 52-week high today. It touched it at one point today. Although we're not, like, if we look at this over the last 3 years, for example, yeah, it's been higher. 2017 was a really nice year, and it's been lower. So you're very much mid-range, okay? If you're mid-range like this, you need some sort of, in my opinion, some sort of an inflection point, some sort of a level where you might want to establish a position. The one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to have the fear of missing out on the upside. It's what you don't want to have to do. So you don't want to look at this and say, oh, it's breaking out to all-time highs. I kind of have to buy it right here. So for me, I will always wait for some sort of a pullback. So maybe if we can get a pullback near this blue line right here, that's that 200 day, that would be much more interesting for me in terms of on the long side. If you get a really good trade, if you get a trade deal or an announcement from a president who desperately would like to at least act as if there's a very good trade deal out there, then this stock's going to have much more supporting it and working against it. So I don't chase something like this, even though I'm more bullish bias on Caterpillar, I'd rather see it sell off a bit more. So if I had to put on a position, I would sell a put to try to enter this at a lower price. And if not, I'd wait for it to come much lower, much more near that 200-day moving average.
Could you explain a little bit about this perfect timing thing we see on the screen here?
Yeah, that's just a volatility, what the volatility of the stock is today compared to itself over the last year. The higher the volatility is, the better edge you're going to have with certain types of trades.
I see.
So the volatility is on its butt right here. It's at 11%. So selling premium might not be the best thing to do in the world right here. Obviously, it's gone up a bunch. So I would wait. I would, if I had to put it, if you said, okay, gun to the head, you got to place a trade, sell a put, try to get in a much lower price. And if not, sit on your hands and maybe Caterpillar will come down. There's always a ton of options out there to place trades. There's always stocks that are oversold, stocks that are overbought. So you don't have to force a trade if you don't like it.
Yeah. And this stuff that you're using over at Ameritrade, I guess it is.
Yeah, this is Thinkorswim. Yeah.
Thinkorswim. That gives you a lot of different ways to analyze these things, huh?
Yes, there's a lot of different ways. I probably know how to use 10% of this platform.
Yeah, but you've identified 10% that you find effective.
Everything else is like over my head. I don't even know what they're talking about.
Right. And you don't want to just paralysis analysis kind
correct
of thing.
It's not for me. No.
All right. Well, let's switch gears in the car here and go over some of the things that you'd like to share with people that you think are interesting as we're speaking right now.
Sure. So for me, again, one of the things that I like to do is I like to talk about extremes. You have a volatility extreme. You could have a price extreme. Okay. Right now, markets are at all-time highs. They're even when they sell off for a couple points here or there. So you don't really have a lot of volatility going on, but you do have some price extremes. So there are two kind of stocks that I have identified that might be interesting in terms of an extreme. So the first one is BMY. So again, I'll go back to like the basics. BMY.
That's Bristol-Myers.
Bristol-Myers. Yep. 8.3 million shares traded today. That is a ton of participation, a ton of liquidity, 30,000 options contracts. So before I even decide what to do here, I have a very good idea that when I put that order in, not only is it going to get filled fast, but it might even get filled at a better price than I put it in because there's a lot of demand for these shares and these options contracts. And I know that I'm not going to have to take a loss just to enter the position. So BMY, to me, this is what a price extreme looks like to the upside. Over the last 10 days, it's up about 5%. It did have earnings. Volatility is really, really, really low. And kind of like Jim's been talking about, look how far away we are from that 200-day moving average. Doesn't mean that I think BMY is going to tank, but I do think that the risk reward to the downside is substantially better than trying to buy this to the upside. Okay. Now, I don't use candlesticks and I rarely even use charts, but I know there are maybe some people out there that this is like a hanging man or whatever the symbol is for candlesticks that might be interesting. But to me, I am super interested tomorrow in potentially putting on a short position in BMY. Volatility has not been lower over the course of the last year. That's definitely interesting. There's a lot of complacency going on in this stock. And since August, it has gone straight up with very little in the way in terms of preventing it from going up. So on the short side, I like BMY quite a bit. And on the stocks that I follow, on the long side, the one that is the most oversold is Twitter. So very far away from its 200-day moving average, very, very oversold. Over the last month, it's down about 25%. So to me, BMY from the short side is very interesting in terms of risk and reward. BMY, that's not how you spell it. Very interesting to me, very overbought here. Twitter, very oversold here. So in Twitter, I love selling the put spread. I put one on yesterday. I'll probably add a couple more over the next couple of days if I get better prices. And BMY, I'll take a look. But again, if we look at BMY, 8.3 million shares. Twitter, 15 million shares. Again, if we looked at that first stock, which was GTN, there's very little, very, very little, if any, demand for whatever shares you're going to buy, whatever shares you're going to sell, whatever options you're going to buy, and whatever options you're going to sell. That means you're going to get stiffed. Twitter, you ain't getting stiffed. You'll probably get price improved on anything that you do, unless you hit a bid or hit an ask. So I like Twitter from the long side, and I like BMY from the short side.
Do you see anything happening in energy that makes you feel like a more significant turn could be on the horizon?
Something like crude?
Yeah, crude or British Petroleum or Royal Dutch or you know, just the XLE, I think it is.
Sure. So XLE, I mean, look, it's been below that 200-day moving average all year.
Right.
You know, energy is a weird one. Energy is a weird one because there's so many macro influences here. But to me, I personally don't really see inflation like ever really going up unless we have a currency problem. So I don't really see any giant move here in energy anytime soon. Now, I'll probably be wrong and it will spike up huge tomorrow because that always happens, but I don't really see any inflation really ending up in commodities going much higher. So the dollar is probably more impactful on something like gold or silver or like palladium or copper. But I don't really see any huge edge here in XLE. You know, if we can get something sustained above the 200 day and there's a little bit of validity, maybe that's more interesting. But today I don't see an edge in energy.
How about when we're going into this holiday season, anything with consumer discretionary ETFs or the XRT that would be of interest, or this could be a disappointing one?
So I'll give you guys one, but you have to give me like 10 seconds to look it up. You guys are probably going to really like this.
Sure.
So my favorite year-end trade.
Right.
Sorry, I'm just looking at my stuff. So you talk about, so Q4 historically over the last like 80 years has been the strongest quarter of the year. Then if you break it down a little bit further, December has been out of that. December out of that has been the best month out of that specific quarter. And then when you break it down even further, you have that second half of December that is typically the best. So my favorite year-end play, and this one works very, very well in my opinion. Let me just get the actual numbers for you guys. So I think it's there to there. Just bear with me for 1 second, but you guys will really appreciate this.
Sure.
So over the last 30 years, let me just get this date actually right for you guys. I'll keep it hacky. Cool. So over the last 30 years, so to me, pretty big sample size. Over the last 30 years, there it is. Okay. So over the last 30 years, December 20th to January 3rd in the German DAX has been a very, very profitable trade and very, very consistent. So a lot of the seasonal stuff that I like towards the end of the year is like the Amazons and the Walmarts of the world around Black Friday that week, and then EWG going into the end of the year. The Santa Claus rally in EWG is substantially better than the Santa Claus rally in something like the S&P or the NASDAQ, just in terms of how the numbers have acted over the last 30 years.
Yeah, because it's already on a bicycle here. It's already gone from 26 to 29. And you're thinking during that time period, it could even add to that?
I do. And only because, again, like I can look at my data. So I purchase data directly from the exchanges. Mm-hmm. And I have a data team of 3 data engineers who are like crunching these numbers. So without looking at a chart, if I see over the last 30 years, something is up 80% of the time for a large average return, like I will just look at a chart to convince me not to, rather than convince me to go for it. So if like this is, we get to middle of December, and EWG is at like nose-bleeding areas, I won't do it. But if it's not, I'll do it.
Right. If it's already extended, you'd be cautious.
Right. So
it
like,
still looks like
the chart is a hey, Steven, back away. You're getting a little overexcited here. It's
right.
Not, oh, does this work? It's, will it prevent you from doing it?
Right. On the utility, you know, interest rates on the TLT, yields have risen. And some people think if this 135 area on TLT is kind of interesting, that the yields may stop rising. Do you have anything on the TLT that, it looks like obviously it's down towards support here, huh? But what's the green perfect timing telling us? Is it possibly going to break this 135?
on a long-term basis, I don't see how we live in a world with like much higher interest rates. Mm-hmm. I don't see it. And again, you have Europe that's going further into negative territory. We are at all-time highs on the S&P 500 or in the Dow and the NASDAQ, and the Fed's already used a bunch of its tools, which are typically used in periods of recessions or bear markets to try to, you know, maintain confidence in the markets. So it's interesting. The Fed's already used a lot of its gunpowder, if you will, and it's not so dry anymore to be able to subvert or improve a potential bear market or a potential recession. So you have the rest of the world is further into negative interest than we are. We have a lot of debt in this world, more than the average person realizes. That's financed at negative debts. You know, if you really have a substantial increase in interest rates, that's going to create a giant problem because the bond market, the fixed income market, is so much bigger than the equity market that's going to create real problems. So for me, I am a long-term bull on something like TLT and a long-term bear on something like interest rates. So yeah, I mean, TLT, if we get down to maybe that 135 or that 131 level, I would personally be much more interested in getting long TLT. This is setting up for something that looks pretty nice to me.
As a segue here, because these yields have risen, it has helped the banking stocks because people believe that their margins are going to be better. Mm-hmm. If you look at XLF right now, would that be indicating that this, if the yields are going to stop rising, would it be the banks may stop rising as well? What do you think?
Maybe I don't really kind of take that correlation, if you will. But again, I do a lot more trading than investing, if you will.
Right.
But one of the investment theses I have, which is more of a long-term core position, is interest rates. I don't believe are going to continue to go higher, even though they've already come down a bunch. I don't really see interest rates going much higher. You have a lot of companies that are basically alive because of incredibly low interest. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of debt that's only able to survive because of incredibly low interest. Mm-hmm. There's so much money at such low interest that it would be very surprising for me. The U.S., the United States debt levels, right? That's going to be really tough to continue to add debt at such high interest rate levels. So one of my core positions for the long term is that, again, I think interest rates, especially at the long term, at the longer end of the curve, are going to be going down. So anytime I see a nice sell-off in something like TLT, mm-hmm. that's a nice opportunity for me if I want to add to my core position. And I've been long TLT for a while.
Sure. Now, a sharp guy out there, Paul Tudor Jones, has been on record saying that he can see a $1,700 or better price in the gold. Now, we had a big move in gold up to 1580 and the GDX also, because the GDX obviously gives you a little bit of leverage and that kind of thing. But we had a pullback now. Does it look like that pullback's over and it's time to re-enter? Or do you think there's more churning down here on the GDX?
Yeah. I mean, again, like, are we at a nice price extreme? No. Am I a long-term gold bull? Yeah, for sure. Do I have like a price point where I think gold might go? No. But again, like, to me, my core positions are based off of a little bit more of the macro stuff. So we keep on printing more money, more money, more money, more money. Right. We keep on just printing. And at some point, you know, one of the reasons that the dollar has done okay when we've printed billions of dollars in the last couple of weeks is because every other currency is like worthless. It's literally like really, really worthless, at least compared to the dollar. Our economy is so much stronger than theirs is. So the dollar stays where it is. But to me, the next explosion is in gold, for sure, to the upside. So it is a core position of mine. I've had it forever. I had it for years. I have a lot of gold bullion. And to me, again, like, we keep printing more and more and more money, which the value of that currency keeps on going down and down and down. And at some point, if we keep on printing, the dollar is really not going to be worth what it is today. And what will happen if that's the case is gold is going to continue to go higher. Central banks are buying gold, like, and they'll buy any single gold bullion that you have right now. now. So I'm a long-term bull on gold for sure. To add to my core position, I would need it to come down a little bit more. But I'm a long-term bull on gold for sure.
Yeah. China and Europe definitely seem like they're investigating the concept of digital currency to replace the dollar as far as the international settlements, because they seem like they're getting very uncomfortable with one currency coming out of a country that they don't agree eye to eye on with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have anything else you want to hit, or do you want to come back and help these people out with some of these other names?
Yeah, let's keep rifling off some names here.
All right, ALG.
Hey, guys, we got a couple from the audience. You want to go to those? TSM and GBTC.
TSM and GBTC. Well, GBTC is the Bitcoin.
Oh.
GTBC.
Right.
And so, we talked about that yesterday a little bit. GTBC. Right. And, that's your... GBTC.
I mean, look... There's probably better shots in the dark than Bitcoin. I can make a really good bullish case for Bitcoin or cryptos, and I can make a really good bearish case for cryptos. Right on the bullish side, like we're talking about here. Yeah, I mean, like Jim is saying, you have central banks that are like, well, how could we support the dollar a little bit? And digital payments is maybe the way to go. There's no question about that. But then you have governments, a lot of governments, who are looking to shut that down. So there's a really good bull case and a really good bear case for some digital currencies in GBTC. I mean, if you want to make a trade here, I mean, sure, this looks a little bit more bullish than bearish. I wouldn't touch anything cryptocurrency related with a 10-foot pole. That's just me speaking. There's nothing behind it. It's complete fairy dust.
Yeah, I was thinking that it might be viewed as an option, meaning you're buying it at $10 and basically it's throwaway money like you would on a call option.
Yeah.
But it's a call option that'll stay in play until the company goes out. And, if it is going to be like if you played that game at $4, you wouldn't be unhappy when it went to $16.
Now, years ago, when, it was ridiculous whatever Bitcoin was doing, that was interesting because then you had no futures market and you had no way to bet against it. So all you could do was buy to open your position or sell to close your position. So back in the day, one of the reasons that Bitcoin was able to parabolically go up was because you could never bet against it. It was like an IPO that had a very short float out there, so there was none to borrow.
Right.
But, they basically came up with futures so that they could whack the people who were thinking that Bitcoin was the way to go. That's the only way that they could do it. If you want to take a flyer on it, go ahead. Just make sure your trade size is really small.
Yeah. And like I say, if you view it as an option, you would take speculative capital, and you'd identify speculative capital. And then if you put a position on, if it went to zero, it went to zero. But if it goes nuts, you would be able to hang on to it as long as GBTC is solvent.
Right. And if it goes nuts, you can email me and tell me that I was wrong, and that'd be fine too.
Hey, like I say, in this wacky world, anything could happen. I'm just looking at the chart. The thing was at 40, then it was at 4, then it's back to 20, then it's back to 10. So
if it was a
driver, the cops would pull it over for drunk driving,
Yeah. I mean, for me, Jim, I am focused on high probability trades that give me a substantially better than 50% chance of making money.
Well, here's a good now let's move forward to the other one, which is Taiwan Semi, because the semiconductors have been going nuts.
What's the symbol?
TSM. And I think people are concerned that, hey, has this thing gone too fast, too far? And is this semiconductor thing going to reverse if the China deal doesn't look like it's going to happen as much? Because this stock is about $10, about 20% above its 200-day moving average. It's very close to its 52-week high, which happened on the 7th, which was Thursday. And that was at $54. And so we've now gone a full week without taking out that 54 number. So people are probably a little concerned that it might roll back a little bit here.
So again, look, TSM, 8.6 million shares traded, 5,000 options contracts. This is a tradable security. You're not going to have to take a loss just to enter the position. If you have a big account, you can get filled on whatever you want. If you have a small account, same thing. Great. Now we can take a look at the chart. Now, things that worry me about what I see right here. Number one, volatility or fear or the market pricing in a potential for a larger move is at zero. It's never been lower this entire year. For the bulls, that is on very shaky ground, in my opinion. Right? On very shaky ground, especially when it's at a hard zero. In terms of its distance away from the 200-day moving average, we're at nose-bleeding levels. If someone had asked me about this a couple days ago, I'd be a lot more excited than I am right now, just because, again, we've come down a couple bucks. The risk reward, in my opinion, on this is much better to the downside than it is to the upside. Again, with volatility at zero, people are sitting back, they put their feet up, they think they're on easy street. As we've all known, and Jim can tell you, I'm sure, a gazillion examples. Whenever you think it's that easy, is the next day is when you get kind of hurt a little bit. So this stock is overextended to the upside for sure. Could we have it? Could we have more good news on trade and this go higher? Of course. Right? But I don't ever bet on what someone else is going to end up doing. To me, I look at this, the risk reward was better a couple days ago. It is still better to the downside. I would have to wait for this to come back a little bit higher. And if I saw volatility was still at zero, then I would probably establish a short position here.
And use that 55 number as a get out point or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Nothing too crazy.
Well, this next one is an airline, Allegiant Air, ALGT. And the transportation average has really had a big move, but it does seem like it's rolling over a bit today, 70 points lower. Is Allegiant Air, ALGT, has that had its run temporarily, or is there more to come?
So ALGT is, guys, 100,000 shares traded today.
Wow, that's skinny.
I know members of my programs that trade more than that in a given day, and they're not gazillionaires. So ALGT, I would not touch it with a 10-foot pole. So yep. What we'll do is we'll go ahead and we'll go to our correlation friend, and we'll see what happened here over the last year. So ALGT, ALGT, can't write it. ALGT, great. Over the last year. And let's see what it comes out with. Because maybe there's something that moves very similar to Allegiant Travel that gives us a lot more volume and a lot more liquidity so that we don't get hosed just to enter the position. So it looks like JP Morgan and Apple actually trade the most similar. So if I look at ALGT and JP Morgan, yeah, they move actually very, very similar to one another. Now, ALGT, if I look just at that chart, is it a little bit overextended to the upside? Yeah, but it is consolidating around that level. So I would need to see a little bit of confirmation above the recent consolidation or below the recent consolidation for me to say one way or another. It's definitely close and it's definitely consolidating. And as we know, the longer stocks consolidate, the larger the move typically, not all the time, but typically after the fact that happens. So ALGT is actually, I would never trade ALGT. If it broke one way or the other and I could find a stock that was very similar to ALGT, maybe I would take advantage of it. But look, even though the chart looks great to maybe do a bullish or a bearish trade, depending on how this consolidation breaks out, guys and gals, complete non-starter. I'm sure the bid and ask spread on a given day is like a dollar wide. Not worth your time and definitely not worth your money. So we'll have to wait and see here.
Yeah. This next one, Stephen, is very interesting because they're coming out with earnings this week and they, similar to Taiwan Semi, have had a big run. And this is NVIDIA, NVDA. Today it had a pretty strong day, up $1.43, but I would imagine it's a little bit extended up here, and it'd be interesting to see if the earnings are going to either propel it higher or get the thing to fill in some of the room underneath.
Yep. So NVIDIA has had a nice little run over the last couple weeks, just as the market has, it's had a nice little run here over the last couple weeks. It is starting to get a little extended to the upside, but not crazy. It does have earnings. So there's two things to look at here. Number one, can you put on an earnings play? There are a lot of good earnings plays out there to go ahead and take advantage. Right now, volatility is too low to put on a good earnings play. It's more likely, based on the numbers that I have, that NVIDIA will have a move from its earnings that is outside of what the market is expecting because volatility is so damn low. In terms of taking a position after earnings, you kind of have to see what the earnings announcement looks like here.
Hey, this next one is, I got one, I'm going to bounce around a little bit, Zillow. A lot of guys who short stocks have been all over this thing because it's gone from $51 in July all the way down to $26 November 20th. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's bounced now. And the question, I guess, would be, is this a dead cat bounce or have they beaten this thing up enough? Because short interest is at 22% of the stock and the company is losing money.
So 3.6 million shares, check. 6,000 options contracts traded, check. So now we can actually investigate what to do here with Zillow. It's rare that I talk about the fundamentals of a company because typically I don't actually look at that or am aware. However, this Zillow that is going up here at $51 is a different company than this Zillow. It's a completely different company. I personally would not establish a long position until maybe we had a little bit of a pullback and some volume there with that pullback, or there is some thought or idea that this company at some day might actually turn a profit. See, one of the things that the IPO bubble that just popped has taught us is, you know, as we get more to all-time highs, not every single Goldilocks is going to get bought. You need to make money, or you need to have a prospect that you're going to make money, not that you're going to reduce your margins and make less money. So in order for me to establish a long position in Zillow, although they did have pretty good numbers, I'm going to have to see some sort of a pullback that is met with volume, or I'm going to have to see them actually being down a path where they can be profitable. They're not like Amazon, where Amazon does hundreds of billions of dollars a year in revenue, where the company is growing, right? This is a company that does like $1 billion a year in revenue. That's very, very small. That's the equivalent of having the stock trade only 100,000 shares in a given day. It's peanuts when it comes to financial markets and publicly traded companies. I don't love it short here. I would like to see more of a price extreme for me to maybe get short this position, but the risk reward to the upside is not there yet. I would need to see a pullback that's met by a little bit of volume for me to maybe back this up. But to me, the fundamentals are so tragic, if you will, this company, that I wouldn't consider a long position unless we got that consolidation. We got that volume met at the pullback, at whatever pullback there may be. And that hasn't happened yet.
All right, we're at the top of the hour, Stephen. It's important that people are reintroduced to yourself. Maybe people came in the middle of the broadcast. So reintroduce yourself. And again, if you have a special offer, this is a great time to give it. But definitely let these people know how to get a hold of you, because there's a lot of stuff I learned today that I found pretty interesting. So,
I appreciate that. Yeah. So thank you for the introduction. And thank you. Thank you, David. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Davey. Thank you, Jim, for having me on the show. You know, I am Stephen Brooks. Hi. In a former life, I was a professional baseball player, and I got into investing and trading because as a minor leaguer, I never made it to the major leagues, but as a minor leaguer, your salary is only about, when I was playing, about $1,200 a month. So nothing that you can really live freely on, nothing you can really live comfortably on. So I needed to make more money, and I got into trading because the barrier to entry is basically zero. And if you have any money, you can open up an account for free and you can start trading the next day. So I got into financial markets and been a self-directed investor for the last 12 years. I've been a teacher and a coach, which I love, over the last handful of years. And, you know, we really are able to show folks how to be much more consistent without really getting too crazy with charts or candlesticks or Fibonacci or anything like that. So we use a lot of statistics to back up what we do, and it ends up working really well. If folks want to learn more about me, where's this thing? You can go to stephenbrooks.co. We hold a free training every few weeks. The next training is tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to put a link in the chat.
Can you see it on the screen?
No, we're still seeing your charts.
Because we have to share the whole screen. There you go. Yeah. So if folks want to learn more about me, we do hold a free training every few weeks. The next one we're holding is tomorrow. If you just go to stephenbrooks.co, that's it. Give us your information. That will register you for the training that we're doing tomorrow. And we'll go into a lot more detail about the stuff we talked about today. And we'll show you how to hopefully make more money and spend a lot less time doing so. So that's the best way to learn more about me, learn more about my stuff and what we do with our my members of my various programs. But again, I was able to get to the point where I am today, which is not to toot my own horn, but it is quite successful, without having a background on this, like Jim was talking about, that education is really not the most critical thing ever, but just trial and error. You know, I blew up a couple accounts and things like Forex. God, that was horrible. I blew up a couple accounts, and only because I stuck with it and really took to heart that there were some things that were not working for me, and basically doing the opposite of those, I've been able to be, in my opinion, pretty successful. So if you want to learn more about my stuff and how we go about it or my various programs, just go over to stephenbrooks.co. Nothing else, pretty simple. Sign up for our training, and we do the training. We'll do it tomorrow evening, and if you can't come, that's fine. We do a replay and follow up and all this stuff. But if you like some of the stuff that I said today, then you will love what I'll be talking about tomorrow on the training. So if you are interested, stephenbrooks.co. Nice and easy.
Thank you very much, Stephen. And I think we gave him a lot of information today. Hopefully people can get some more information by contacting you on that website. Yep. Right now, I'm going to send it back over to David. And David, thanks a lot. We had a great time here today. And we'll talk to you a little later.
And really, I'm sorry, just one more thing really quickly, and I know everyone has to leave, but look, what you'll notice is, in Jim and I talking is, you know, he has a little bit of a different philosophy than I have. I have a little bit different philosophy than he has, but he was very consistent in the way that he was looking at things, and so was I. You know, the idea with this whole liquidity thing, you know, there are newsletters and services, blogs on all of these stocks that I've never heard of. But again, there's so much that is completely out of your control when it comes to investing and trade. There's so much that's out of your control. You want to make sure that the things you do have 100% control over, you're doing that to the best of your ability. So one of the things that we talked about a bunch of times here is this idea of liquidity. If there is a stock that does not have the liquidity and the participation that is going to allow you to get filled at the best price you want, at the time you want, with the size you want, there are thousands of opportunities every single day that will allow you to maybe have a better risk reward, but not have to lose money just to enter the position. You might think that losing a few pennies here and there is not a big deal, but what I can promise you is, over the course of a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, that's going to end up being thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars that you could have just kept for yourself. So even though maybe some people might have disagreed with my bullish or bearish picks, one of the things that you really should take to heart and that you really should investigate yourself, and if you want my help, that's fine too, is really this idea of liquidity. I've seen so many individual traders and investors, you know, following newsletters and services that say, oh, buy this option, but they can't get filled anywhere near fair value. And the reason is because these thinly traded products, liquidity, not only are they the ones susceptible to having these giant moves that you weren't prepared for, but again, who would want to pay $5 extra just to put on a trade and do that every single time? That doesn't even include the commissions that you might incur. So I hope that more than just the buy this or sell this, you've all really learned something valuable with the idea of liquidity and how vital it is. If you make a trade a week and you give up $5 every single trade, that's $250 a year that you just could have kept for yourself if you just traded the right products. I'm going to stop talking now.
No, sounds great. And David, back to you, okay?
All right. Thanks, guys. Great discussion. So just a quick reminder to everyone before we close this up, just be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast network. And you can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past shows or the archive of this episode as soon as I can get it posted. So I just want to thank my guests again for today, Stephen Brooks of stephenbrooks.co and Jim Kenny of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
David.